Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
So, I don't know if you know this about me, but I was a pretty tiny buck-toothed kid when I was growing up. And, you know, kids are kids, aren't they? Kids are kids, for good or for ill. And I was one of those kids because I was that small buck-toothed kid who was bullied a lot when he was growing up. And I had to get into relationship with that really, really quick. And so what I learned is that, oh boy, the world's not very safe. I have to control everything. Can anyone relate to that? Yeah? Two people can relate to that. No? Okay, thank you. Yeah, I had to learn how to control my life, but the problem is nobody gives us a manual, nobody gives us an instruction book for life, do they? Wouldn't that be nice if we popped out as little babies and then it's like, here you go, here's your instructions for life. That would be great, wouldn't it? But we don't get that. We don't get it at all. So I learned very unhealthy ways of finding control in my life. One of those was anger. And I was a pretty angry kid, even though I didn't really know it. And, you know, I got to give myself a little credit, too, because there was a lot of tenderness in that when I was growing up. But what I learned is that I have to put on this frustrated exterior. I have to try and control. And I isolated myself from the world. I learned that people are not very safe. So that meant that I ended up hiding my talents. In fact, I didn't even realize I had talents when I was growing up, and I stopped taking risks in life. And I played it safe because I was in that space of I need to control, and these are the ways that I'm going to control my life so that I don't get hurt. And that didn't work very well. Spent a good portion of my life doing that. And I feel like that's many of our experiences, isn't it? We grow up in this world that teaches us that we have to desperately hold on to control of everything that's around us. And if we don't have control, we are going to find our way into chaos. I'm reminded of the movie, we see it in our media. I'm reminded of the movie 300. Anybody see the movie 300 with Gerard Butler in it? I'm an action movie buff, so I love that movie. And I look back on it now, and that whole movie is about control and not wanting to surrender control. That's what that whole last stand is about, is we are not going to give up control to the Persians. Yeah. And sure, there's some inspiration in that, but I want to call that out because that's what our society tends to do. It's like sometimes we play up ways of being that maybe are not super healthy at all. And that's what was showing up in my life for a lot of my life, this whole idea that if I let go of control, I'm going to fall into chaos. I'm going to fall into no safety whatsoever. You know, at the end of the day, my ego was telling me, if you let go of control, you are going to die. I don't know how, but you're going to die. And so I had to get into relationship with that because it really wasn't working for me. It wasn't working for my relationships. It wasn't working for my career. And when I found my way into a technology career and I started to gain more and more responsibility, I realized that I had to start reflecting. I had to start reflecting on the areas of my life that were not working, especially the areas where I was grasping for control. And that's the first thing that I would like you to take away with you today, is that there is a power in us being able to reflect. And this honestly, it's the first step of 12-step, that we have to be honest about the fact that we might have a problem in life, whatever that problem might be, and look at it honestly and not run away from it. And so I stopped running. I stopped running from my desire to control, and I accepted that, oh, wow, this is showing up in a pretty funky way, and I am messing up people's lives, and I am messing up my life. That's great, isn't it? No, it was not great. So I had to take a really hard look at how the way that I was showing up was ultimately very counterproductive. You know, I was thinking that if I hold on to control, that my life is going to be better, but it turns out that it was worse. And one of the things that you may or may not know, if you've ever worked in the technology industry, is that when you're an engineer and you're good at your job, and I was good at my job as an engineer, the better you get at your job, the more likely that the higher ups are going to be like, oh, maybe Russ should be a manager. Now, the skills that you use as an engineer are not the same skills that you use to manage people. They are not. Luckily, the industry is becoming more and more aware of this trend, but I was one of those engineers who was promoted into management, and I tried to engineer my way through it. Have you ever tried to engineer people? See, Jan has. Thank you for being honest, Jan. How did that work out for you, trying to engineer people? Yeah, people don't want to be engineered. People don't want to be controlled, do they? None of us want to be controlled. But that's what I was trying to do. I saw people as a problem to be solved. And thus, here comes control. I'll refer you back to the talk I gave a couple of months ago where I outed myself as a jerk. That's how I was showing up. And especially in my job at Chicago Public Schools, it really was exacerbated because that was a job where I could not succeed and we could not succeed if we did not all work together. But it's really hard to work with other people when you are a control freak. It's very hard to do that. Most of the projects that we worked on required input from multiple teams within our IT department, teams outside of our IT department. We had to get feedback from all of our teachers, and boy, did our teachers have feedback for us. We had all of these things, all of these different channels of communication that had to happen, and they could not happen if any of us were grasping for control. So I was not a very good manager when I started out. That's what I'm trying to say here, because I had not taken that time yet to really learn how to surrender my control. And that gets us into the title of our talk today, Surrender is Action. I was trying to force my way through all of these problems, all of these projects, through sheer will of personality, and it just does not work. You might get something done eventually, but it's like burning down an entire field just to plant a single crop. That's what I was doing. So it didn't work. And the more I noticed that it didn't work, the more that I received lots of feedback from my managers that said, hey, Russ, have you considered not trying to control everything? Of course, all of the flashing red lights were going off in my head when I heard that, like, let go of control. No, it's all going to burst into flames. That was a phrase we used a lot, by the way, in that department. It's like, oh, this is going to burst into flames. Not like a burning bush either. It was definitely not the good kind of burst into flames. So what I learned through a lot of pain, and I'm hopefully you understand I'm trying to save you from the pain that I went through, and hopefully some of you have gone through this so you know that this kind of control doesn't work. What I had to realize is that I had a pathological, and we'll get to that word in a second, a pathological need to control. I had to learn how to surrender my control, even though it felt like I was going to be surrendering into chaos. But the reality the thing that I learned is that the more I tried to grasp for control, the less control I actually had in life. The less things would work out for me, the less I felt grounded in my center and my authentic self. I had to learn how to surrender. So the desire to control our circumstances, which usually comes from our egos wanting to help us to feel safe in the world, it's a natural human habit. I want to be clear here that it's natural for us to want to feel like we have control in our lives. I can tell you the first time I walked into a Science of Mind center all those years ago was because I was looking for more control in my life, and I suspect that's probably the same for many of us, yes? Yeah. The problem, and here comes that word pathological again, when our desire to control and to grasp and to hold on to our lives, when that comes from the ego and it becomes pathological, which really means that the action that under normal circumstances would probably be okay gets moved to the extreme. It becomes harmful to us and harmful to those who are around us. That's what pathological means. Ultimately, we're limiting the potential of our true self to come out. Because our true self is the self that is grounded in surrender. It's grounded in the divine. It's that true self that already has everything, including safety, everything that it could ever possibly need, want, or desire. That's within us, each and every one of us, even if we're not aware of it. When we are in that grasping, that desire to just control, we're limiting our ability to experience God and to experience God's good. Because really, what we're in is our ego is just going, la 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 la, I'm in control. And it's really not. Our ego is very good at fooling us into thinking that it has control of the situation, isn't it? At least mine is. I don't know about yours, but mine is very good at being like, oh, I have total control of the situation. But we can't feel or experience God when we're in control at all costs mode. I think that's really where our suffering comes from. And the founder of Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes, our good friend Ernie, as I like to call him, he said it very well in Love and Law. He says, unity is the basis of all that there is. There is but one God, one mind, one spirit, and one power. When I embody myself in my thoughts selfishly, I am separating myself from that which I think would be my good. You may think this is a very subtle thing and could not be the reason for so much trouble. It is the foundation of most of our troubles. I am unconsciously separating myself from my good. So, from the Dr. Ernest Holmes himself, I think he hits the nail on the head, doesn't he? So our work is to find ways to let go of control where we might find that we have a pathological need to grasp onto that control. And so I want to be clear here too, because this was something that I had to learn, and I had to learn the hard way. We're not letting go into chaos. I'm going to say that again. We're not letting go into chaos. That's what our ego would like us to believe. Because it believes that we are going to, you know, in losing control, chaos is going to happen and we're going to get hurt. What we are letting go into is the divine order of God. That's what we're letting go into. And I had to ask myself, how could I ever have believed that I could create, my ego, how could I create a more beautiful order than that of the universe itself? We do that, don't we? It's like, I know better than the universe. Yeah, I mean, I can't even say it with a straight face these days because I'm just reminded of how ridiculous I sound when I do. As I open myself up through this work with my ego, and I use the word with because I want to be clear here, we can beat up the ego a lot and really I like the idea of us instead building a more healthy and positive relationship with our ego, where the ego is not driving the bus, our authentic self is driving the bus. At the end of the day, our ego is just sort of our user interface with the world. And so, you know, just like a tool, you can use a tool for good or for ill. And you certainly wouldn't let your screwdriver be dictating how you're building a cabinet, would you? No, you wouldn't. You would use the right tool for the job. So I built a practice around letting go, and letting go of control in particular. I began to change the way that I approached the teamwork in my job in particular to be more collaborative. And it's interesting that I landed in the position that I did in Chicago Public Schools, and I think it was serendipitous, if I'm being honest. Here I was as this control freak engineer who took over the collaboration platform for Chicago Public Schools. Interesting how that worked out, isn't it? What I learned, the more I would let go of control, and it was not easy. It's not easy, but you know, that's why we have community here when we're doing these things, so that we can have coaching from one another and support from one another when we're doing something hard. I learned what it means to create an atmosphere of true leadership. Oftentimes, I think we're taught that the leaders are the people who hero their way through problems when they show up. It's the person who takes on all of the responsibility and they do it all themselves. That does not work in a large organization like Chicago Public Schools, because you burn out, you burn everyone else out, and ultimately you're doing probably not as good a job. I certainly was not doing as good a job as I could. What I found is that real leadership is when we create an atmosphere for those all around us to be in their genius, to share of themselves and their own good. And so I would go into meetings and I would have to tell myself, I have to listen in this meeting before I provide feedback. So a lot of times I would go into the meeting and I would know exactly what needs to happen for my piece, but I couldn't just go in there and steamroll through that, because I needed to allow for the group to come up with a solution, knowing that there were teams that did things I could not. And that if we're happier together, if we're more joyful together, if we can actually, heaven forbid, have fun at work, we might actually do a better job. That's what I think real leadership is, when we can eat. And I say, I'm not saying that up here as like the only leader. Each and every one of you is a leader in life. You have that opportunity to be a leader in life. Real leadership is creating that space for each of us to grow and to be in our genius. And we have to let go of control to do that. We have to be in the spiritual practice of surrender. And I've grown, and I continue to grow and become more myself, what I would consider my authentic self, not from trying to find new ways to control, and that includes through new thought tools, and we'll talk about that in a second, but rather from the act of surrendering to God and letting go of my pathological desire to control. And Thich Nhat Hanh says, letting go gives us freedom. And freedom is the only condition for happiness. If in our heart we still cling to anything, anger, anxiety, or possessions, we cannot be free. So in New Thought, particularly in Science of Mind, but also in some other New Thought traditions, we learn how to do affirmative prayer, and that's great. We learn that oftentimes, if you're like me, as a means to gain a greater sense of control in our lives. But the problems can arise with affirmative prayer when we use that as a means to get into that pathological control. And that can be tricky. That can be a problem. I think the difference is, are we praying to know the truth that is already within us, or are we praying to get something outside of us? Are we praying for surrender to the good that's already here, or are we praying to, you know, make something happen? Emphasis on that word make. Now, before we get into an actual practice that you can take with you, and don't worry about writing it down today because this is our service that we record, so it's available until the end of time on our website for you to go back to. I wanted to make a really clear difference between that pathological idea of control and just like normal everyday day-to-day control that we do. Because what I don't want you to do is I don't want you to just give up to God when you're on the freeway and say, like, God, drive my car for me. Even if you have a Tesla, I'm sorry, full self-driving does not exist yet. So you're probably going to crash if you're not paying attention, if you're not exerting a little control. That's okay. That's healthy control. As human beings, there are certain things that we need to control. You know, I don't want you to stop doing your dishes. I don't want you to stop cleaning your house. I don't want you to stop mowing your lawn. All of those things are totally fine and okay. Please feed your pets. That's okay. The funky stuff, though, that we need to watch out for is when, like, are we feeling like we need to control people? Yeah. I mean, that's what I started out with this talk, right? How often do we try to control people, and how well does that work out for us? Yeah, it doesn't work out super great. It's bad for us. It's bad for other people. So I wanted to make that distinction. Is everybody clear on that distinction? Yeah? Cool. So how do we get into this kind of a practice? Well, if we want to actively surrender to God's good, first we have to say, yes, we actively want to surrender to God's good. That's the first step. But the second thing that we can do is we can start to identify those areas of our lives where we might be exerting a little bit too much control, where it doesn't feel good what we're doing. And so make a list, and if there's anything on that list where you feel anxiety around it, or maybe you feel a little bit afraid about that situation, that's a good candidate. So make an inventory of that. Write down everything that you can possibly think of where you might be exerting just a little bit too much control in your life. And then pick one of those, and I'll invite you, please start small. Do not, like, if you are a raging control freak like I was, do not pick the giant raging control freak situation that you're trying to control, because it's going to be really, really hard to move through that. Instead, find something simple. Like, there might be one really, really tiny way that still, nevertheless, it's like a thorn in your side, this way that you're trying to control. And so you can start journaling about that. And there's two questions that I would like you to journal on as you're going through this practice. The first is, what would happen if I let go of control in this situation? And write it all out. Get creative. This is your ego's opportunity to go nuts and just say the phrase, I'll say vomit on that paper. Everything out. Let it get all out. Do not edit it. Do not try and control the way that this stuff is coming out. Because you might be like, as you're writing, you're like, oh yeah, oh boy, I don't want to admit that I'm doing this. I know I've had those where I'm like, I really don't want to admit that this is the way that I am, but I am. Just write it all out. So once you're done with that, once you feel like you've gotten the entire story out, the second thing you're going to do is answer this question. How would I feel if I let go of control, knowing that there is a divine order that will take over for me? How would I feel if I let go of control, knowing that there is a divine order that's going to take over for me? It's the question about faith. If we have faith, if we truly, truly believe that this universe is here for us, that God is good, what would it look like for us to let go of control and to trust, there's that word, trust, that the universe has got our back? And write it all out and really be honest here, because there might be things that come up like, oh, I don't really trust. I know oftentimes I do this practice and I'm like, oh boy, I'm letting go here and I don't really trust that this outcome is going to be good, but I'm going to try anyway. That might be how we have to do it. So that's the journaling step. Now, with that one circumstance that you've chosen, that you've answered those questions on, you now have an opportunity to continually remind yourself that you are not letting go into chaos. You're letting go into divine order. And I want you to imagine, and you can even do this now if you want to close your eyes and feel into it, any situation where you feel like you're exerting too much control, imagine that you are in a conversation with a physical representation of the divine, whatever image works for you, and ask this representation of the divine, what would happen if I let go of this situation into your control? What would happen if I let go into God? And just let those answers come forth. When you feel ready, go ahead and come back to the room. And know that that conversation is always there with you. God does not take breaks. God does not go on vacation. God's always there. So you can record those answers then that you get, and you can take them into your meditations. You can take them into your spiritual practice. You can take them into your affirmative prayer if you are doing affirmative prayer. Maybe an affirmative prayer is, you know, claiming right here and now that my heart is open to divine order working as and through me. I let go of control. That's a good affirmation. And so I'm going to close today by saying that, you know, reminding us that we're trained from an early age to be control freaks. We really are. So be gentle with yourself. Like I said, start small, but this is an incredibly rewarding practice. I cannot tell you how much more free I feel not trying to control everything. Who knew? In fact, I feel like I have more control over my life by letting go of control into this divine order that we call God or the universe. And as both Ernest Holmes and Thich Nhat Hanh told us, this controlling, this pathological controlling, is the source of many of our problems as humans. So I'd like us to imagine a world where instead we made a spiritual practice out of surrender into divine order. What would it look like if we surrendered our housing crisis into divine order? What if we surrendered the pandemic into divine order? What if we surrendered hunger and poverty into the divine order? Those are big problems. But I don't know if our controlling is getting us where we need to be with them. Yeah. What I love about this practice of surrender is that it makes space for the divine to emerge through us. It makes space for God to show up. There's one thing that I've learned over my spiritual career, it's that God does not show up where it is not invited. We have to make space. That doesn't mean it's not there, just, you know, we don't become aware of it. Surrender makes that space for God to show up as us and through us. It allows a larger idea of what beingness can actually be. It opens us to possibility, and it lets us be just a little bit more free. So I'll leave you with this quote from my good friend Rumi, who's one of my favorite spiritual thinkers and beers. And he says, "Be crumbled, so wildflowers will come up where you are. You have been too stony for too many years. Try something different. Surrender." So let's take that into prayer, shall we? How good it is to simply surrender into the presence of that one power for good, that one mind, that one intelligence, that one life, that one love, that one joy. That which is good and that which is ever present is what I recognize here and now. I know that God is here, as God is everywhere, as God simply is. And I know myself to be one with this infinite divine presence, just as I know each and every one here physically within our center or in the live stream, and indeed in the whole wide world, we are all one with the one. We are one with love, with life, with joy. We are one with all that is good. And it's that oneness that allows me to speak here as absolute truth, the knowing that our hearts are open to surrender. I call forth that gentle invitation for us to, each of us, surrender a little bit more into the loving embrace of the divine, knowing that we do not fall into chaos. Instead, we are surrendering into divine right order, knowing that just as this universe is filled with this divine right order, it exists because of this divine right order, so too do we exist and live because of this divine right order. And so I know that ultimately this divine presence and power for good has got our backs. I make it a little bit easier for each and every one of us to let go of anywhere in our life where we are controlling, where we desire to control in a way that is not serving us, that is not serving those around us. And I know that in the space that is made within our hearts as we surrender to the divine, there is such beautiful freedom. Such beautiful freedom flowing as and through each and every one of us. And that is what I call forth here and now. That divine feeling of freedom, that sense of freedom, and the action of freedom in the world. I say that we are one and we are surrendered to that good. Oh, and so there's nothing more for me to say other than my gratitude for this freedom, for this good, for this surrender, and for the fulfillment of this prayer. In gratitude, I release my word into the action of the law. I let it go, and I call it good. And together we say, and so it is.